Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Wednesday, September 25th. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm sitting in today and I'll be your host, Jeff Browns, the producer and engineer. We've got a great show. Ron Flint will be here to talk about the changes at NAO. Julie Walker will be here to give us the details about Saturday's Ultimate Frisbee Tournament. And we'll get a preview of this week's Wildlife Wednesday at UAS. We'll learn about the upcoming vocal workshops with Barney McClure and find out about what's happening at the Canvas in October as far as classes. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Proposals to build several coal shipping terminals in the Pacific Northwest are coming under fire from tribes. As Steve Jackson reports, plans call for trains carrying coal to pass through Spokane, Washington.
Some Spokane area residents are worried what increased coal train traffic will mean for the area's automobile traffic. For its part, the Spokane tribe is going on the record in opposition to two proposed terminals because of the environmental degradation caused by burning coal. Twala Abramson-Swan, the air quality coordinator from the Spokane tribe, says back in the 1980s, the tribe implemented more stringent air quality standards when a coal-fired power plant was proposed adjacent to the reservation.
So when we learned about the coal train impacts and the direct impacts to some of the other tribes and learning about their opposition, we also learned about the impacts to the Spokane region, and that's really where, you know, we focus our efforts. So we're looking at our impacts to the waterways, to the Spokane rivers, also to the Columbia River, because, you know, we put a lot of effort into restoring our salmon and restoring our fish and protecting our waters. So this project doesn't do anything that aligns with our goals.
The proposed terminals, if approved by regulators, would be used to ship coal to China. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson, reporting from Spokane.
A South Dakota tribe has a new state-of-the-art community center for economic and social services. The facility was built with a USDA loan and is worth more than $31 million. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Keely Bultina reports.
The new Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Administration Building consolidates 26 individual office sites into one single service center. The tribe expects to save thousands of dollars by combining offices into an energy-efficient space. The building is also constructed to reflect Native American values. Former tribal chairman Michael Salvage started the project in 2007. He says the community center has longevity.
Four, five, six generations from now, they will still understand the cultural significance of the facility, thereby instilling in them pride in their heritage.
Salvage says the facility is circular, inspired by a Sundance ceremonial area. Connections to the four cardinal directions flow throughout the space. The admin building serves more than 7,000 tribal members in northeastern South Dakota and part of North Dakota. The building was dedicated last week and included a USDA official. For National Native News, I'm Keely Bultina.
Oklahoma's governor is looking for ways to keep the father in the baby Veronica case from facing charges in South Carolina. KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports on ongoing legal issues.
Dustin Brown, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, faces felony charges related to his fight to keep custody of his daughter, Veronica. This week, he turned her over to Matt and Melanie Capo Bianco, Veronica's adoptive parents. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon signed an extradition order September 4th to force Brown to face charges of custodial interference in a South Carolina court. A spokesman for Fallon says the governor's hope is that Brown will not have to go there. An extradition hearing is set for October 3rd in Oklahoma. If he's convicted of the felony charges, Brown could face 5 years in prison and an end to his career in the Oklahoma National Guard. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
U.S. South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson is among a group of senators working to create National Bison Day. Johnson and others introduced a resolution to designate November 2, 2013 as the holiday. The resolution outlines the historical significance of bison to the country. It also notes the cultural and economic importance of bison to tribes. The 2013 Canada Council for the Arts York Wilson Endowment Award goes to the University of Manitoba School of Art Gallery. The award will purchase Robert Heal's Sand Bay Residential School Series. The series was created as a way for the artist to come to terms with his memories from residential school. On this day in 2012, Royal Canadian Mounted Police announced a break in a missing and murdered women case in the area known as the Highway of Tears. Police announced Bobby Jack Fowler from the U.S., who died in prison, was tied to one of the unsolved cases. Many women, mostly Aboriginal, have disappeared on the British Columbia Highway going back decades. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. I'm sitting in today. I'm Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is running the board. He's the producer of this show. The weather today is mostly cloudy. It's been a fantastic fall day. Tonight, rain developing late. Tomorrow, rain. Thursday night, showers. Friday, showers. Friday night, showers. And we're back to rain, but it's not raining right now. Speaking of rain, makes us think of fall, and the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center is switching to its fall schedule this Friday. They say there's bears out there, and they're looking great with the weight gain through foraging on salmon and ground cones. And this Friday night, from 7 to 8:30, Alaska Geographic, the center's nonprofit support association and bookstore, has an autumn season celebration. They're going to be talking about conservation education programs provided for the public, especially for children and their families. So that's from 7 to 8:30. Get there early, maybe you could see the bear show. Okay, we all know there's really not a bear show. There's just bears there fattening up for winter. So here in our studio is Julie Walker. She is coordinating an event this Saturday, the Ultimate Frisbee Tournament. This is sponsored by the Juno Empire, and Julie's the coordinator. Thanks, Julie, for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell me, what is an Ultimate Frisbee Tournament?
Well, Ultimate Frisbee is a no-contact team sport. You play it with a frisbee, obviously. And you play it on a field with end zones similar to a football field. So you're running, you're catching, you're throwing to your teammates. The person with the frisbee can't run, so they must stay still. They can pivot, but they have to pass the frisbee to a team member within 10 seconds. And you've got two teams, going back and forth, similar to football, where you score in the end zone and then you would switch and you'd go again.
But no tackling.
No tackling, yeah, no contact. And it's although it's similar to some traditional sports like football or soccer where you're running a lot, it's unique in that it's self-refereed. So that's one really unique thing about Ultimate Frisbee is that it relies on something we call spirit of the game, which is all about, it's all about players taking on the responsibility for their own sportsmanship and rather than the referees.
Interesting. So, because it sounds like it has a lot of different things, like if the person with the frisbee can't move and they could pivot, that sounds a little bit like basketball, that there'd be all these people trying to block the
right,
throw.
So you can only have one defender at a time.
Okay.
And so that defender is counting 10 seconds. You get 10 seconds with the frisbee, and your defender is counting to 10, and you have to throw it before the 10 seconds is up. So there's a lot of kind of unique things that it's in being self-refereed like that. It's just a really fun, unique sport, but it does have a lot of aspects of different traditional sports.
Okay, so Saturday's event is free, and where is it, and what's the time?
It's at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse, so it'll be indoor, so rain or shine, we'll be there. It's going to be from 4 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m., so the first game will start at 4:30, and we'll be doing kind of a round-robin style tournament with games. The first game at 4:30, second game at 5:30, and so on, games on the hour.
So if you're interested, do you have to go with a team?
No. So actually, you can bring a team, which would be 7 to 10 people, and we'd ask that you contact me in advance to let me know that you're planning to do that. Or you can sign up as an individual, and I can place you on a team. And so I have a little online registration that you can do that would tell me what kind of experience level you have, so I know to try to keep you on a I'm trying to make the teams even, so trying to randomly assign people based on their experience so that it's a fun event for everybody and the non-experienced people can learn from experienced people on their team. So you can register individually or you can register as a pair. If you, you know, want to go with a friend and you want to make sure they're on your team, then you register together and that there's a space for that on the registration form.
Great. And how do people do that?
So they can register, like I said, as a single pair or whole team. We ask that they pre-register by Saturday at noon, so I have some time to coordinate the round robin bracket. They can contact me directly. My phone number is 503-358-4080. You can also find us on Facebook, which would be an easy way. You can look up Juno Ultimate on Facebook. It's also on the Juno Empire's Facebook page. So either of those Facebook pages, you can find the link to the registration. It's kind of a long link, so I won't say it on the air.
No, people can just search it.
Juno find Ultimate. Juno Ultimate on Facebook. Or the Juno Empire, since they're the sponsor.
Okay. So I'm still kind of foggy on the logistics.
Okay.
So it's from 4 to 9. Do you have to show up at 4? Like, what happens if you show up at 6?
If you show up at 6, then you won't be able to participate.
So it's from 4 to 9, and it's round robin, so people will be eliminated as they go. Teams will be...
Well, there won't be an elimination. So you'll play, you know... You'll be guaranteed at least two games. So you'll play a couple of games, and depending on how many people we get signed up will depend on, you know, how many games you'll get. But we will guarantee everybody will have two games at least.
Okay, it sounds like fun. And this is the first time that it's been done in Juno. And have you played the game?
I've played Ultimate Frisbee myself for about 7 years. I played competitively in college, and since moving back to Juno, it's been fun to kind of connect with the small group of Ultimate Frisbee players here in Juno, and we kind of wanted to introduce the sport a little bit to people who haven't yet played in Juno and try to kind of increase the number of players in our community.
That sounds great. How big is the core group?
The core group, I think, you know, we play kind of regularly throughout the summer. I would say 25 to 30 people would be a good number of a guesstimate. Not everybody comes out every day. It's been a really relaxed, you know, pickup game, whereas you just show up and you play with however many people are there. You just kind of scrimmage.
Right, and then you probably communicate through your Facebook page.
Right.
Hey, this is happening.
Exactly.
Go check it out. So this is a free event. It's from 4 to 9 at the Diamond Field Parkhouse. You want to definitely get in touch with Julie beforehand so she knows, and that contact information is either check out the Facebook page, Juno Ultimate, and then there's a number
503-358-4080.
Okay. And then I just have one more question. So is it a good spectator sport?
Ultimate Frisbee is fun to watch, I think. My husband doesn't like to play, but he enjoys watching the tournament. So I think, yeah, if you want to come out and watch, you know, the Diamond Park Fieldhouse has a good location upstairs on the track. You can look down on the field. That'd be a great place to come and watch and stay off the field so you don't get hit by a Frisbee or something.
It sounds like, well, what are the downsides, right? Oh, my, I'm going to be hit by a Frisbee. It's worse. You could get, like, you know, like hockey, you know, when you go to hockey games and so on and so forth. Frisbee seems kind of tame, but it sounds really kind of funny. You know, it sounds like a lot of fun that it will be just this organized Frisbee game.
Yeah, we're trying to keep it non-competitive and fun and, you know, really live by that spirit of the game where we're all just in it for good sportsmanship and fun. And that's something you find at all levels of Frisbee, all the way from league, all the way up to world games. You'll find spirit of the game as a, you know, governing philosophy.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us. And that's from 4 to 9 at the Diamond Field Parkhouse this Saturday.
That's right.
Great. Thanks,
Thank
Julie.
You.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, it's the 25th of September, 2013. It was on this day, 1789, the Congress approved 12 amendments to the Constitution, which had been recently ratified. 10 of them would eventually become the Bill of Rights that we know today. It was George Mason from Virginia who had been disappointed in the Constitution. He thought that it gave too much power to a central government and with little protection for individual rights, so he lobbied for the amendments. And after a few years, Thomas Jefferson joined the cause, and George Washington and James Madison. In the summer of 1789, Madison introduced 17 amendments before Congress. That was narrowed down to 12, which were approved on this day, 1789, sent to the states for ratification, of which 10 were ratified, which protect, among other things, a citizen's right to freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, a well-organized militia, and a speedy and public trial, and freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, and excessive bail, freedom from the quartering of troops in your home, and self-incrimination. And Article 10, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. One of the amendments which did not succeed would prohibit members of Congress from voting to raise their own pay without allowing the voters to have a say. It's the birthday of William Faulkner, born New Albany, Mississippi, 1897. Wrote 19 novels, 18 of them set in the South, 14 of them set in a fictional version of his hometown, Oxford. William Faulkner, who said the South's the place for a novelist to grow up because the folks there talk so much about the past. When I was a little boy, there'd be sometimes 20 or 30 people in the house, mostly relatives, aunts, uncles, cousins, and second cousins. Some may be coming for overnight, staying on for months, swapping stories about the family and about the past, while I sat in a corner and listened. That's where I got my books. Faulkner wanted to get into the First World War. He was rejected by the U.S. Army Air Corps because he was only 5'6", so he applied for the Canadian Royal Air Force. He was still in training up in Canada when the war ended. Nonetheless, he returned home to Oxford, Mississippi, wearing an officer's uniform, and claimed to have been injured and to have a silver plate in his head, and went to Ole Miss for a few semesters as a war veteran, even though he'd never finished high school. It's the birthday of Francine Duplessis Gray, born in Warsaw, 1930, the novelist, short story writer. Her first novel was Lovers and Tyrants, came out in 1976. And it's the birthday of the children's author and cartoonist Shel Silverstein, born in Chicago, 1930, an author who avoided the press, refused to give interviews, did not go off on book tours. Here's a poem for today by Hilaire Belloc, The Yak. As a friend to the children, commend me the yak. You will find it exactly the thing. It will carry and fetch. You can ride on its back or lead it about with a string. The Tartar, who dwells on the plains of Tibet, a desolate region of snow, has for centuries made it a nursery pet, and surely the Tartar should know. Then tell your papa where the yak can be got, and if he is awfully rich, he will buy you the creature, or else he will not. I cannot be positive which. The Yak by Hilaire Belloc. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, providing balloon creations for birthdays, weddings, and other events. More information at 523-1099 or nightmoodsjuno.com. Night Moods, a proud sponsor of public radio in Juneau.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis. I'm sitting in this Wednesday, this beautiful Wednesday with rain a-coming, so if you could get out after you listen to the show, that would be a good idea. I am in the studio with Patricia Rary from Alaska Wildlife Alliance, the Southeast chapter, and local author Bob Armstrong. Bob and his longtime collaborator Mary Wilson have a new book out called Natural Connections in Alaska, and tonight at UAS, the Egan Lecture Hall, from 7 to 8, he will be presenting about this book, and there will be about 40 copies available, and It's not exactly completely, we have a couple of copies here, you have 40 copies, but it's not like full tilt published yet, is that correct?
Right, these are what we call pre-published. And what we're hoping to do is to find a donor, so to speak, who will pay for printing, and then we'll go overseas with them and have 1,000 copies printed, and then we will distribute them for free to various conservation organizations like Alaska Audubon, Alaska Conservation Foundation, and educational institutions and so on.
Schools and such. So great.
To do whatever they wish with
them. Yeah. It's a beautiful book. I have it in my hand. It's called Natural Connections in Alaska. There's a stunning polar bear picture on the cover, and it's filled with beautiful full-color pictures. It's really, really lovely. So, Bob, this is your 18th collaboration. This is your 18th book, isn't it?
Probably, yes.
Okay. And it's all about wildlife in Alaska. I mean, that's what you do.
Anything to do with nature.
Okay. So how did this book come about, this Natural Connections in Alaska? What made you decide to do this book?
It was a weird situation. I was up at Eagle Crest at a tree being drilled by sapsuckers. And I visited the area about 2 hours once a week, and I recorded all the different things that I saw coming to the sap after the sapsuckers had drilled their holes. And, of course, you have a lot of downtime when you're doing something like that. So my mind started wandering, and I thought, gee, it'd be wonderful to put out a book illustrating some of these types of connections in nature. And so I approached Mary Wilson, probably the state's best ecologist, and fortunately she agreed. And 2 years later, here it is.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. But have you and Mary worked together before?
Yes, we did a book on beavers around the Mendenhall Glacier.
I thought that you had, so I just wanted to make a correction if I was wrong. So, Bob, you've been observing and photographing nature in Alaska for over 50 years. You're a former fisheries biologist and former associate professor at UAF and UAF.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a story about what inspired your very first book?
Memory. It happened back in the mid-1970s. I was very interested in birds in Alaska, and I was taking photographs of a lot of birds, but there wasn't any book back then that covered Alaska very well. And so I approached the bird experts at the university to see if they'd like to collaborate on a book, and they said they weren't interested. And so I said, well, maybe I'll try. And it took me 5 years to put the Guide to the Birds of Alaska together. And I learned how much I didn't know. But that kind of started me.
Yeah, thank you for the tenacity. And I mean, that's a resource that you want to talk a little bit, Patricia, nodding your head emphatically. I mean, I know it's a fabulous resource. So
yes, and he's revised it, too. So it's better than the first. You've revised it multiple times, more than two, haven't you?
Yeah, this is a fifth revision that's out. So it's stayed in print since 1980.
The pictures get better.
That's terrific. Yeah. And I have to say, with the book that I have in front of me, I've seen Bob's other books, of course, because they're kind of like part of being an Alaskan, but you use your books as resources. But the book that I have in my hand right now, I really do have to repeat one more time. It's really stunning. The photography is just, if it was a little larger and a little thicker, it would have been what we used to call coffee books that have gone the way of
table.
Many other things.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, when people come to UAS at 7 o'clock at their presentation put out by the Alaska Wildlife Alliance,
mm-hmm.
and refreshments will be served. What's the talk specifically going to be about? There'll be these books available.
Mm-hmm. It's the subject is natural connections in Alaska, and we will just take a few examples from the book and illustrate them and talk about them. So there'll be lots of slides, several videos, some weird music.
And the books. I have to say that I saw you and Mary Wilson on Hearthside Books author cruise, and I have to say that Mary said something about, she described an ecosystem in the most accessible way that I have ever heard it. So I just want to say all this stuff is, it's not only for scientists. It's for anybody who's living in our natural world. It's very, very accessible. So there is the scientists that are really interested in this stuff, and then there's the pedestrian user, which I will definitely raise my hand and say I'm one of those. But it really has so much value. So I want to thank you for your contribution of all the work that you've done. And before we go, Patricia, can you tell us a little bit about Alaska Wildlife Alliance and what they do here in Juneau?
We're the only branch in the state, and the organization's been around since about 1978 in Anchorage. And we are promoting people's awareness of wildlife and trying to make them cognizant of some of the problems and his interconnections. Exactly that, the interconnections.
That's great. So this is a perfect thing
it
for you to host
is.
Tonight. Mm-hmm. So once again, Bob Armstrong and Mary Wilson tonight at UAS, 7 to 8 at the Egan Lecture Hall, refreshments, and the books will be available, Natural Connections in Alaska. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Look at that gull drifting across the sky. It seems to move through the air without effort. How does it stay aloft and fly so easily? Natural adaptations have given it a strong yet lightweight body, and for their weight, its feathers are among the strongest structures in the world. But aren't a bird's bones, like ours, heavy? Let's take a closer look. That red-tailed hawk circling overhead has hollow bones strengthened by struts, light but strong. The bones of frigate birds, masters of the air, weigh less than their feathers. To further reduce weight while maintaining essential strength, many bird bones are fused. For example, a bird's hand and fingers are made up of only 6 bones. In addition, the ribs of a bird are joined to other bones to make a rigid box that supports those long wings, just as the wings support the bird. And finally, the bird just wouldn't fly that well if not for the streamlining provided by its sleek feather coat. With its body thus supremely adapted for the air, the Arctic tern, one of the superstars of migration, can travel across thousands of miles of open ocean each year in effortless flight. Learn more about birds when you visit birdnote.org.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement, available at various locations in Southeast. Thank you.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We have just been listening to Tony Trischka. I am your host today. I'm sitting in. My name is Joan Pardis, and Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And we have Jesselyn Rintella from the Juno Jazz and Classics here with us to talk about the upcoming Barney McClure workshop. Hi, Jesselyn.
Hi, Joan. How are you?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day. What a great fall day it is today.
Oh, it is.
So the forecast doesn't look so hot, so we want to enjoy it. So, Jesselyn, before we get into the when it is and all the logistics, I've heard about the Barney McClure workshop since I've, for years and years and years. And I'm just wondering, I've never had the opportunity to see the performances.
Oh.
Because I had a job where I traveled a lot and so on
sure.
and so forth. So I'm just saying for maybe audience members who are like me, what is it? The Barney McClure workshops, who is he? Does he live here? Does he come to town?
Sure.
How does it all work?
Well, we call Barney our honorary Junoite. So if you haven't had the opportunity to see him perform and to see the folks who do his workshop perform, it is a night like no other. He's been coming to town for several years with us, with Juno Jazz and Classics, and he does a five-day cabaret workshop. Now, Barney's a jazz pianist, extraordinaire in his own right. And he's also just an extraordinary teacher. He's very nurturing. So when he does this vocal cabaret workshop, it's very holistic. It's about the whole performance, from owning the stage to working with the microphone, to performing in front of not just, 200 people, but people who are your friends and neighbors and maybe your boss or maybe your employees. I'm not sure which one would be more scary, but it's a soup to nuts cabaret workshop. And it takes a really multi-talented person like Barney, who's got years of experience behind him, who knows this town, who knows the community. There'll be a mix of experienced singers and people who haven't been on stage before. He's really great at working and nurturing the best out of everyone.
Sounds great.
So
it kind of seems like with his experience, he could kind of look at the person's, the whole being and just say, oh, this would probably be good for you. And,
sure.
And then goes from there.
Yeah, from adapting your own sheet music to fit your vocal range, from that very first adaptation to, putting your own spin on whatever songs you're working with, to really making that final performance your own. Like I said, if you haven't had the chance to see the culminating performance where your friends and neighbors are up on stage, they really own the stage in a way that it's a whole new side of people that he brings out.
That sounds great. So when is this? So when's the workshops? When's the performance?
So the performance, which everyone is invited to, and we encourage you all to come, that'll be at the Jack, and that's on Friday, October 25th. So that culminates this week of workshops. So those are on October 20th, that's a Sunday, through the 25th. And then on the 25th, we're going to have a big party at the Jack, big cabaret. It's all swanky. We'll have tables and snacks, no host bar, the usual suspects. So that'll be at 7 o'clock at the Jack.
Okay, how much are tickets?
They're $20 even. It's a local event, so it's a lot of fun to come out for that Friday night show.
And how many performers? How many local performers typically?
It entirely depends on how many people sign up for the workshop.
And how does one sign up?
You can do that as we speak at jazzandclassics.org. You can also swing by Hearthside Books or the Jack box office. So if you've ever wanted to take the stage, or if you know someone who does, and you can do that key kind of elbowing, wink, wink, nudge, nudge thing to get them to sign up, this is the perfect time.
Okay. Typically, how many people perform? Like the last time?
20, 25. It's.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 5 to 10 people.
Oh, there's so much talent in Juno.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah.
But I absolutely don't doubt that. But I am just amazed. And some of them are returning people, and some people are taking the stage for the first time.
Exactly, exactly. So there's some people who've been honing their skills and getting better and better year after year. But we always love to see the first-time folks out there conquering the stage.
Oh, wow. I just thought of three women. All right, beware, friends, who should do it. And it's certainly not me, which everyone who knows me will agree. But anyway, that is fantastic. So sign up is now. It's October 25th at the Jack, 7 p.m. This is Juno Jazz and Classics.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk a little bit about Juno Jazz and Classics. So you just put on some great concerts.
Yes, I hope that people listening made it to Cowtown. That was this Sunday. Feels like yesterday, but that was such a great dance party. It was so beautiful to see all of the great swing dancers out there. And
Oh, that was a great event. So, but we're moving on to, you know, bigger and better things, and this our 28th season. We're just going strong.
Okay. And so there's Barney McClure, October 25th. There's Swinging in the New Year.
Yes.
And that's obviously
December
the New Year.
31st, yep.
But I hear there's something new about the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. There's this all-festival pass. What's that about?
So this is brand new this year. We're doing an all-access festival pass for 2014. And what it will do, we have not done this before, it includes one ticket to every single show that we will do during this, our 28th annual festival, and those dates are May 2nd through May 17th this year, or next year rather, 2014. So it's one ticket to everything, and that includes the shows that routinely sell out, Blues Cruises, Strings at the Shrine, our headliner, our big festival finale. It is one ticket to everything, and it's a little bit more than 15% off what we're offering it for. And then we're also doing a premium pass, which we have not done before either. And for anyone who's ever wanted reserved seating at a sold-out concert, I can't recommend it enough. So those are available by contacting us, 463-3378, or send us an email through our website, jazzandclassics.org.
Okay, so Juno Jazz and Classics, Linda Rosenthal's brainchild, is an amazing thing that happens here in our little burg, one of the many things that happen in our little burg. And I'm sure that membership is a big part of how this keeps on going.
Oh, so, absolutely.
So how does one become a member? And what does that mean?
Well, members are anyone who contributes to our organization. So we do offer a number of benefits at varying levels of membership. But I can't stress the importance enough of membership, just whether it's, you know, a minimal contribution or whether it's a larger gift. Every donation that comes to us, we leverage somehow for other support, whether that's through grants or whether that's more volunteer hours or just expanding our capacity so that we can do shows like the Hot Club of Cowtown last week and continue to do events in the fall like Barney McClure and the New Year celebration. If you remember, last year we also had Jake Shimabukuro here in February, and it's our supporters who led us to have that flexibility to bring more artists to town. So that's it's a great way to support our organization. Or, of course, volunteering, which I sort of touched on earlier. We welcome volunteers all the time. So there's a number of ways to support Jazz and Classics.
Okay. All right. So the next step is the Barney McClure workshops. If you're interested in participating, that starts October 20th. Grab your spot. And then if you want to go and see it, which I'm in town, and I'm definitely going to go try to do that. It's October 25th at the Jack at 7 p.m., and I'm assuming those tickets are available now.
Yes, yes, they are. And the vocal workshop, just a side note, does usually fill up before the start date, so go ahead and sign up now.
Okay. Jesselyn, thanks so much for coming by today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now that was Barney McClure. So as we were just talking to Jesselyn from Juno Jazz and Classics, he's coming up October 25th, 7 p.m. is the show at the Jack. And for the people who are interested in being in the vocal workshop, that starts October 20th, and Jesselyn says it fills up. So if you're interested, you should get in touch with Juno Jazz and Classics. You could just search for them on the web. So that's an amazing resource in town. And then also there's this Fusion Partner Dance Weekend coming up. It's Intro to Fusion class at UIS Rec Center from 8:30 to 10:30 on Friday. Then there's a fusion dance workshop at the Hangar Ballroom from 12 to 5. And then there's a dance party Saturday night from 8 to 10 at the Hangar Ballroom. And it says here, fusion is where social dance meets freestyle, where modernity meets tradition. Explore Jedi musicality and discover your ability to dance with others to any music, salsa, swing, blues, rock, hip-hop, dubstep, and more. No partner needed. Sounds like fun. So that's dance. We were just talking about music, and now we're going to talk about art. Catherine Kell is here. She's with the Art Studio Program with the Canvas, and we're going to talk about upcoming classes in October. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay, so what's cooking?
Well, we have today I'm going to talk about a couple classes that are coming up first 2 weeks of October. I do want to mention, however, that we have programming from now all the way up through December already done. You can find our full class listings either on our website at canvasarts.org or just drop in and grab a flyer the next time you're downtown. As far as classes coming up, starting off, we have a beginning jewelry workshop led by local artist and long-term Junoite, Rowan Law. In this class, participants will learn how to solder, saw, file, and texture using silver and base metals.
Oh, wow. Sounds great. When does that take place?
That's going to be Saturday, October 5th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and will cost $165 with all materials included.
That sounds great. So that's a one-day full on...
Yes, full workshop.
Great.
Also in early October, we have Candace Christie will be teaching a mixed media painting class. This class gives participants the opportunity to explore the varied options available in the world of mixed media. She'll discuss elements of design as well as demonstrate basic collage techniques, including how to create texture with acrylic mediums.
When does that meet?
And that's going to start Thursday, October 10th, and goes through November 7th. It's an evening class, 6:30 to 9, and costs $180. Once again, all materials included. And if you're not quite sure what that type of artwork looks like, Candace Christie has a couple of her work display at Annie Kale's, as well as in the Canvas window display.
Oh, sounds great. So you can check it out and see if it's something that interests you.
Yeah, so, yeah, mm-hmm. Good times. If you're interested in traditional oil painting, but with a twist, we have a new class called Painting Large in Oil with Kylie Manning. This course is designed to offer students a fresh relationship to the figure. You'll be using only large-scale brushes on the canvas. This will basically help students differentiate between edge variations and find new priorities in their compositions while still investigating oil painting methods from a photograph.
Okay, and when does this take place?
This class will be on Mondays, starting October 14th through November 4th, 6 to 9 p.m., evening class, and is $185. We're really excited to have Kylie back. She actually taught classes at the Canvas when it first opened, and so this is her return. She's a internationally exhibited Juno artist, and she's great work.
Sounds great.
Yeah. If you're trying to bridge the gap between drawing and painting, we have a figurative drawing class, which is being taught by David Woody. The participants will use charcoal and chalk to explore drawing from a live nude model. Emphasis will be placed on form, value, anatomy, and human proportions, as well as movement and balance. Then the teacher will also help you learn transfer techniques, so you can actually take that drawing and then turn it into a painting from that same drawing.
Interesting.
Yeah, the class is suitable for all levels. It starts October 16th, runs for 4 weeks, ends on November 6th. It meets once a week, Wednesday evenings, 6:30 to 9 p.m., and costs $170. This price includes not only the cost of materials, but the model costs as well. This fall, the Canvas will also be offering several classes centered around Tlingit artwork, all of which will be taught by Ricky Tagaban. Ricky is a recent addition to the Canvas and has not only taught several very successful classes this summer, but is also a 2013 recipient of a Rasmussen grant for his Tlingit wall hangings. Ricky's next class of the Canvas is going to be on formline design. It is a Tuesday night class, and we'll give participants the basic tools to explore formline design. Students will construct Thinkit crests, working through drawing, painting, and collage. It's a class that's suitable for beginners as well as those with experience, and is a great introduction to Thinkit art and the different aspects of its visual elements.
Wow, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and the formline design class starts October 15th. It runs for 3 weeks, so it ends November 5th. It's a 6:30 to 9 p.m. class and costs $165.
Okay.
And then for those of you wanting to try your hand at the pottery wheel, we've got a couple opportunities coming up. Canvas Pottery Studio Manager Brandon Howard will be teaching a beginning wheel throwing class starting Tuesday, October 15th through November 19th. It's also an evening class, 5:30 to 8:30, and costs $220. And Brandon will also be offering this class for our younger artists, ages 9 and up. It will be on Mondays, October 14th through November 4th, 3 to 5 p.m. It's a four-week class and costs $160 with all materials included.
Okay. I have some questions about all these classes.
Yes,
so,
ma'am.
Of course, all the details you could check out at the site.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One more time.
That would be canvasarts.org.
Okay. So is this for the classes that we just talked about? Is this for somebody who's, like, never really picked up a paintbrush?
Yes.
With a painting class, you know what I mean. I'm talking figuratively. But is this, you know, are they suitable for people who have, like, no art experience?
Yeah, all of our art classes are suitable for beginners as well as those with previous experience. So if you've never, you know, done mixed media, you've never done painting, you've never done pottery before, you can come and try these classes and, you know, learn a new skill. Or if you've already, you know, had some experience but just want to expand on what you already know, same classes.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And so your schedule is up. You have classes running from starting in a little bit all the way through December.
Yes.
And then you also have First Friday events. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. So that's every First Friday from 4:30 to 7. And do you showcase, is it revolving? Do you showcase teachers? How does that work as far as First Fridays?
Well, we like to use our gallery as a community space. So we have local community artists to exhibit, and then we also have reach artists to exhibit. This particular month, we'll be having Elise Tomlinson, a local artist, great work. She'll be featured in October, but then in December, we'll have our reach artist show. So
that sounds great. And what? Now, we just said December, and we said reach. What about the reach window in over the holidays? Who does that?
I'm not entirely sure who does that in the Reach office, but it always looks fantastic.
It does.
And it's fun. You know, people get to go out there and, like, interact with it. And
so if you're not familiar, the Reach office, they have a big window on the corner where Reach and the Canvas is.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just our own little Saks Fifth Avenue, to speak. It just has a great holiday theme, and that usually starts. That's up for that First Friday in December gallery walk. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming by and telling us what's happening in October at the Canvas.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Hey kids, ages 7 through 12. Since there's no school next Thursday the 26th and Friday the 27th, come join Discovery Southeast for a day of outdoor adventure, fun, and learning. We are excited to study how the nature of Southeast Alaska prepares for winter, just like us. On Thursday we'll explore Douglas Island, and on Friday we'll investigate the beaches and terrestrial habitats near the Eagle Valley Center. Transportation from downtown and the valley will be provided. Call 463-1500 or visit the Discovery Days page at discoverysoutheast.org to register.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council, with support from the Silver Bow Inn and Bakery, presents Hawaii's legendary master of the slack key guitar, Keola Beamer, performing Me Lama Ko Aloha, Keep Your Love, Saturday, October 5th at the JDHS Auditorium. Joining him on stage is Native American flautist R. Carlos Nakai. Together, their unique blend of indigenous American cultures brings the true spirit of aloha to Juno. Tickets available at the Jack Hearthside Books and online at jahc.org.
Thank you.
So we were listening to our Carlos Nikai, who will be performing with Kaola Beamer October 5th, and that's through the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. So I'm Joan Partis, Jeff Brown's producer and engineer of the show. I've been sitting in. Today we had a beautiful day. Tonight, patchy fog in the evening, mainly south of Juno, rain developing late. Thursday, rain. Thursday night, showers. Friday, rain. Friday night, rain. Saturday, rain. Highs around 52. Saturday night and Sunday, rain likely. Lows around 42. Sunday night, mostly cloudy. So looks like we're getting back into the rain, because it is full in southeast Alaska. Please turn in tomorrow at 3 o'clock to listen to Shauna Strasser host the show. She'll be talking with Sharon Gateman about the Sunday's Rotary International Potluck. They'll get a preview of the Juno Lyric Opera's production of La Traviata. We'll also talk to Sarah Milks from the Fairweather Equestrian Club about this Sunday's Community Day, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Thanks for listening to KTOO News Juno.